back at the Artichoke Music Cafe next time, but this episode had to be recorded today before a fundraiser to help complete a documentary on the life and death of one of Oregon's favorite musicians, percussionist and multi-instrumentalist, member of Pink Martini and Lions of Batucada, among others, Derek Reef, who committed suicide in August of 2014. Today, director Joni Fox will talk to us about Derek, the film, and the fundraiser, which is being held at Pink Martini World Headquarters in downtown Portland on Thursday, April 4, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Let's welcome, for the first time, Joni Fox. Hello, Joni.
Hello, Tom.
You know, it's always nice to see you, but it's with a project like this, there's always a sad side to it. You started this film, right? I mean, it's your film.
Mm-hmm. It did.
And we all knew Derek in one way or another. I mean, I knew who he was, and we knew to say hi to each other. And but I wasn't a close friend. But of course, his death affected me, and I was, when everybody went down to the waterfront that day and marched with the Lions, I was there for that, and it was a thing that I'll never forget. I was doing a story on the Lions of Batucada, and I was doing a story on March 4th. And so before the old armory downtown, before that became the theater, we were shooting March 4th there, and then they got a call from somebody, could have been Derek, that the Lions of Batucada were going to be up the street at the Crystal, so they decided to march up the street. to the Crystal, and there was this one moment, one of the great moments in Portland music, where we're marching west, and March 4th and the Lions met, and
wow,
and it was just this moment where, and then everybody marched into the Crystal. It was just this great moment, and there he was right in the middle of it, because he knew everybody and played with everybody. You know, when did you first meet Derek Reef?
I first met Derek when he was dating my friend Tadimdia Bridges, who mm-hmm. was his girlfriend. And the first time I met him, I thought he was incredibly charming and very charismatic, very articulate. He was sort of like a movie star. You know, he had that sort of energy to him where mm-hmm. people wanted to be near him. People mm-hmm. were drawn to him. He made you feel, when you were hanging out with him, like if there was something was about to happen and you didn't know what was going to happen. And it was usually mm-hmm. related around music, you know, and you'd be yeah. out and have a magical evening with him, you know, mm-hmm. going from one venue to another and meeting all kinds of people and just always just full of life and wanted to share and bring everybody into his world of music. He mm-hmm. loved bringing people together.
Yeah, yeah. And he played all kinds of percussion instruments, didn't he?
Oh, my gosh. His basement is full of, well, when he had his house, his basement was absolutely full of all different kinds of percussion instruments, mm-hmm. Brazilian drums, mm-hmm. Afro-Cuban drums. It was endless. You know, he even had a piano. He even had a plastic trumpet that he was, you know, playing around with for a long time and, you know, learning how to get certain songs out of his head that mm-hmm. he was always creating. And there's a song that he is an original composition of his called Loch Ness Monster. Mm-hmm. And it was recorded in Phil Baker's basement before Derek passed. And Bruce Withycombe and Gavin Bondi and John wow. Ram, Derek Reith and Phil Baker play on it. Mm-hmm. And Phil remastered it, and Derek recorded pretty much everything that he did. And when his family gave me his computer to as a resource, and so many files and so much music and so much incredible stuff. But seems that he went to take a lesson to get this horn section out of his head, like so that he could write out the sheet music for everybody to play. And it's such a wonderful song. We're going to release it with the documentary, but I'm working with CD Baby right now, and we're probably going to release it. But it's amazing, and it's like a time capsule of, and it's an original composition. It's all of these polyrhythms that are really complicated, and he was always kind of working on this piece with his different groups that he worked with, with Three Beat Nation, or I think it was Go Green Go Go at one point in time too. Those are bands that he formed after working with Brian and the Lions of Batucada. These were, and then he had a Marika II band for a while. But his favorite thing to do was when he wasn't on tour, he would come home and sit in with all these other different bands, and he just wanted to be with them and play and celebrate the Portland music scene and the diversity of it, because he just loved it so much.
So it must be very emotional, very hard, difficult, the subject matter in a film. I understand. I did the first documentary on assisted suicide in Oregon, and we followed a guy for 2 years. But he was planning to do it. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, there was no shock involved.
The shock, I think, is the part that is the hardest. To be able to begin to absorb it, because it's really hard to imagine that someone that you love and care about that deeply sees that as their only way out of this pain. It's just unimaginable to think of that they got to that place where they were in that much pain, that they saw that as the only way. And then there's a lot of regret that you have around that. And I know you question that. What could you or have done differently, or what could you have said, or was there anything that you could possibly have done that might have changed that moment in time? I think that's what's different about when someone dies of natural causes or cancer. They, like you said, you know it's coming, and you don't do that that ruminating of looking for every single moment and trying to figure out how it could have gone differently. And it's just it's hard to get past that. And everybody that I've talked to that's lost someone who's died by suicide, that is the hardest part, is knowing that they felt that sad and that alone and that desperate, and that they didn't reach out, and but they can't, because they're in it, you know. It's just, that's why one of the positive things that have come out of this is my relationship with Cascadia Health. And they introduced me to people that are working here in Multnomah County on suicide prevention. And I was able to take some classes and have some conversations with people that are on the front lines, and they're working this really emotionally charged situations. And the number one way to prevent suicide is by talking about it. And it's the same topic. And how do you even begin that conversation? So that's what we're... One of the things that we really want to accomplish with this film is to be able to use Derek's story as a way in to a very difficult conversation, and be able to start to open up that forum, to have that dialogue, and to let people know that they're not alone. And what's been really interesting for me is watching the last couple of days, because Thomas Lauderdale wrote this beautiful letter. And he posted it on Facebook. First of all, he sent it out to all of his contacts through email, and then he posted it on Facebook and other social medias about Derek and what happened and the reason for this documentary. And so many people have been posting and saying either they lost someone, or they've suffered from depression, or, I mean, just so many people are identifying with it, and you can tell that they want a resource and a place to be able to have these dialogues. And I didn't realize how many people were going to be affected just by a post. It's interesting.
But, you know, there is making the film one way of your own healing?
Yes, I would definitely say that. And I don't know if I knew that then. I just needed a place to start to put some of that energy and to be able to sit with that grief. So I just started documenting everything that was happening. Well, first of all, it started with I worked on a memorial video for the private memorial. And then Pick Martini ended up putting it on the website. And I think it still lives on the website next to Derek's picture. But from then on, Tadimdia, his girlfriend and my dear friend, she started a camp for kids, a music camp, a percussion camp for kids in Derek's memory. And the first thing that the music community did after Derek passed, he passed on August 20th, and I think it was October, I want to say 21st, or around that date, they hosted, I think there was 8 different bands that came together and created an event to raise money for that first year of the summer camp. And it was amazing to see all of these people come together and all of the different communities and the diverse music groups that Derek played within the city. And so they raised money all that year, and then they held their first camp, and the camp became very successful. Every year she would do 2 weeks, and it was kids coming from underserved as well as served communities, but it was bringing them together. It was free to everyone. And they had 2 weeks of percussion with the most amazing, incredible teachers in the city and some in the country. And, you know, that come and even some that came from Brazil and came from Cuba to teach, which was incredible. And so Tadimdia was really successful with that. And I just started videoing everything that happened. I videoed the that foundation, that first show. Then I created a promotional video for the Derek Reith or the Freebeat Nation camp. And then I started realizing that there was a bigger story here. And I how many people were also affected by his death and how many people he affected in life in such a positive way as well. And that he sort of had a global story because people were reaching out to us after he passed from all over the world. And we were selling, we also, Tadimdia with Sock It To Me created a sock, this red sock in Derek's memory, because Derek's Orisha is Shango, and so his color is red in the contemplate religion. And so Pink Martini sells these socks on, when they're on tour, and that money always went towards the summer camp. So people were reaching out to us wanting to buy the socks from all over the world, which was really cool. And then they started taking them on tour, which was great. But yeah, he really had a far reach. And because he had such a passion for other cultures and for travel and to really, like when he started studying the Brazilian and the Afro-Cuban drumming, he became a student of the culture and the spirituality of it. He didn't just have an appreciation for the music. He went all the way in. He read every book he could. He met master teachers. He pursued the spiritual aspects and wanted to know everything about the origin of the music. That's pretty phenomenal for a white boy from Vancouver.
But is it like constantly in part of your consciousness? But I mean, can you see a time when you're finished that you could let go of some of this?
Yes. My goal for, I think, I don't know if it's letting go because you don't ever really get over it. It's, you learned how to live with it and, and how to, like my goal for the film is for it to be able to, of course, get a platform for distribution. But what I would really like for it to do is to be able to go out into the world and go into all different spaces and have a community speaker, whether it's a veterans group or a youth group or a community center, that there's somebody there after the film is over to host a conversation about suicide and suicide prevention and how mm-hmm. to talk to someone if you mm-hmm. are concerned that yeah. they're in either having suicide ideation or contemplating. It's a really hard thing to ask somebody that. And that's one of the things when I took the suicide prevention classes, they have you do role playing, and it's really difficult to ask someone that question. But yes, I guess I didn't answer your first question. This was a way for me to process, and still is a way for me to process, Derek, right. death right. by suicide.
Yeah, you know, it's it is so easy. Because we know we shot his death in our documentary, he wanted us to, and it's always there, mm-hmm. it's just always there, you know. I guess I'm over it, sort of, you know, but you never do get over it, you know.
Well, you were also there at someone's probably most vulnerable and transitioning moment of their life. That's huge.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you actually were there to help this person move through this process and to respect their wishes, which is really wonderful. And the whole
Yeah. I mean, there's parts of it that were weird. A friend who was an asshole and stuff like that, you know.
Mm. But, yeah, things get tricky around death. People.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a lot of that after Derek died, a mm-hmm. lot of questioning behavior. But it's fear.
I guess. My situation was different from yours because you weren't there and it was a shock and all that. But even though I knew it was going to happen and I had to make sure the production was right. You know, it was me and Greg Bond. We were the two directors and there was a sound guy and, we had to work. We couldn't take time to mourn or be shocked or feel anything when it was happening because we had to make the piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, you know. So it's, in that way, it's a lot different from your situation. I mean, I know that you'll. I mean, I know I'll never forget it, but I know you'll never forget hearing the news.
No, I will never forget that moment. No. It was the worst moment of my life. It's the worst day of my life and still is
mm-hmm.
day. And I don't think I'm not the only person that feels that way. I know that.
Yeah. So where are you in the production?
Well, we're about 2/3 of the way through filming. Mm-hmm. We have some more filming to do. I recently was able to film Thomas Lauderdale, which was amazing. And China Forbes as well. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Davis.
Oh, great.
Pepe Raphael. Pepe,
oh, boy.
It turned out Derek started out with the bottle. Well, he played with the bottle blondes simultaneously while he was joining or beginning to play with Pink Martini. But he credits a lot of his growth to playing with Pepe and the bottle blondes because he's cute. He says he had never been counted in before, you know, and... He'd been in drum circles, and he says it was really lovely playing with all those musicians and how kind and giving they were to him.
Oh, sure,
yeah.
So, was there a lot of already existing footage of Derek talking?
Well, this is really interesting. I went to go meet with John Brody, the Pink Martini's first manager.
Sure.
And he told me about this footage that had been shot in 2007. And he said, there's an hour and a half of Derek in his home. And I was like,
wow.
What?
Jeez.
You're kidding me. Yeah. So I went back to Pink Martini and I spoke with Bill Tennant, their manager now.
Mm-hmm.
And he started helping me approach the filmmaker who had shot this so that we could get permission. And thank you, Bill, for doing that, because it changed the entire course of the film. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's this amazing footage of Derek. He'll be telling his own story, which is just incredible. And going through his computer, I had all this wonderful audio, but they didn't have smartphones at that earlier, you know, and they were also always playing, so nobody was taking a lot of photos. So I had a lot of audio, but I didn't have a lot of video or pictures. Mm-hmm. And other than Thomas had a wonderful collection of Polaroids, this was just really exciting because it changed the entire landscape of the film. And I had always envisioned Derek telling his own story with the audio and the elements that I had been gathering from his computer. But this just, he's healthy and he's vibrant and he's articulate and sexy and he's just at his prime in this. And it's just so beautiful. And what I love about this is that if you didn't know Derek, you're going to get to know Derek.
That's great. That's great. So tell us about this event coming up.
Oh, yes. This is incredible. Thomas Lauderdale, bless him, has just been such a support to this project. He has opened up his home and is having a fundraiser on April 4th, 2024 at 5:30 at Pink Martini headquarters downtown.
Mm-hmm. World headquarters.
That's right. World headquarters. Thank you. World headquarters. It's such an amazing place. It's like a museum going in there, as you know.
Yeah.
You know, Thomas is a historian as his second career. So
Thomas is history.
Yes. Yes. In the best way. It's it's fascinating going into that space and spending time with him. I really enjoy it. So he has got Salt and Straw involved, which is great. Mukluk is going to do the food. Mm-hmm. Arnold Pander has created some beautiful artwork for the film. And we're going to have a limited edition of signed and numbered pieces of art that'll be available as offerings if somebody wants to make a donation. Also, the Hollywood Theater is our fiscal sponsor, and that's been really great because people can make tax-deductible donations through there. If you're at all interested and want to go to the event, you can check out Pink Martini's Facebook page and Instagram, Thomas Lauderdale's Facebook page and Instagram, The Beat Lore Facebook page and Instagram.
We'll put all those links up.
Awesome. Thank you. Or you can email me and I'll send you information as well. but I'm really looking forward to gathering with everyone. I didn't know this until the last few days, but China and some of the other members of Pink Martini are also going to be performing, which is going to be really exciting
and
fun.
That's really good.
And
I had her on the podcast about a year ago where she was just finishing up the album.
I know. That's so exciting. I directed Rise, that she wrote in Derek's memory. Uh-huh. And that's also going to be part of the documentary as well. So that was such a really special experience to work with her on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is it called Beat Lore?
That was the name of Derek's production company.
Ah.
And we liked the sort of the beat lore, you know, the beat story. And it seemed like another way to carry on his memory and his energy. Mm-hmm. And he really, really wanted to move into film and doing producing and music supervising and those kinds of things. So it seemed fitting to allow his banner to be there.
How are you going to feel when this is all over and you've got a finished product? Do you know?
I really don't. I don't. I've been working on this and been in it almost for a decade. You know, there was 1 year I had to put it down just because my own mental health, I had to kind of take a break from it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, Tom. That's a really good question. You ask me again.
Well, I can tell you one thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a combination of such a relief and sorry to have to give this up.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, as soon as it's ready to go and it's out there, it's no longer yours.
That's very, very true. But you know what? It's not just mine. This has been such a collaboration with so many people involved, and it really has been a community effort. And I hope that now this will go, that our goal in this event too is to build this community, the Beat Lore community, so that when this film is finished, our community can help us take it out into the world as well. And let's get it out there and get it creating that dialogue and that conversation.
I know, but I know what it's like, and it is your baby, and there's going to be a wonderful day that's in the future where you're not going to make any more edits. You're not going to write another line. You're not going to do any more interviews, you know?
Yeah.
And it'll be done.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I
All
know.
Right, well, listen, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. I'll see you there.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so glad that you're going to be there, Tom. And thank you so much for having me. It really means a lot. I'm a big fan of yours, and I appreciate everything
that you
do for the music community and the arts. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Okay. And that, as we like to say at the end of these podcast episodes, that's entertainment.
I love it. I love it. Be well, Tom. Thank you.
Okay.